just have to warn you, look out, it's going to be a bad one tonight. I'm right there ready.
Once in a generation, a fantastic voice comes out of singing. It speaks for every last mother's son of us. Right, George?
Wow. What a way to come on. What a way to come busting out on a vast stage of life. Come roaring out your kid tennis shoes, kicking up dust, raising a thin film of rubber smoke as you come tearing out. All flags flying. Yes, sir, that big ball bouncing up ahead of you there on the screen. And that voice saying, sing along, gang. Keep them knees loose and high. Move, move. Silliness. Hey, I have a philosophical question I'd like to ask my fellow Americans tonight. Hello there, gang. I want you to answer this question, if you will, please. It's been bothering me. What character speaks entirely in a foreign language on television and delivers an entire commercial using the following language? Quack, 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 quack. Character. He's grown to be my favorite television character. Who is he? Who is that? Yeah. Thank you. That was real nice. That's good. Who is the character? We'll award you a brass figlegee with a bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me who that character is. Some days when I walk down the street, I can just hear him talking to me. In fact, he reminds me of many bosses that I've worked for. I never can quite understand what they're talking about. I mean, they sit there in the desk there and they quack, 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 quack. And they say it with such great authority. I mean, they just lay it out. Now, what character is that? Come on, before I go any further, I just want to see. Speaking of American things, I mean, you know, it's happening everywhere. Are you ready to note a straw in the wind, gang? Straw in the wind time. In spite of the fact it's the end of the week, it's also straw in the wind time. And there's no question about it. You agree, don't you? That we are slipping slowly backwards into the mire and the muck of the Middle Ages. I mean, you know, it's kind of groovy. Bubonic plague is popping out again. Yeah, I mean, it is, you know. The guy's got lice, you know, they're having an invasion of lice in Lodi and the schools over there in Jersey. Yeah. They've even asked for the deadline, 30 days are left for the lice. And by the way, for those of you who are interested in lice, does anybody out there have a sure cure? But we'd pass it on to the other listeners. Denver's a kind of a hip town, as a matter of fact. Denver, what's happening in Denver? Denver, the University of Denver, and its list of course offerings notes a $10.90 surcharge for course number 32. It's a very important straw in the wind. I'm sticking it into my vast file so that by the year 2755, they'll know just what the hell it really was like in our time. Course number 32, Nick, if you'd like to take this one. And by the way, it's a full 3-credit-hour course in the humanities. It's a $10.90 lab charge, and the lab charge is to cover the cost of candles, bats, blood, and other items, which will be needed for the lab part of the class, which is witchcraft theory and practice. The school says. And that's correct. That is correct. The character that I have just described who speaks in that language is Joe Graziola. And he does it very well. That's right. Quack, 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 Hold it, Nick. Hold it. That's enough culture. That's enough culture for tonight. I don't like, people get bored like that. Incidentally speaking of being bored, what radio show? There was a radio show one time where, on the radio show, one of the characters was a chicken that sang the Washington Post March. That's right. I'm not kidding you. There was a chicken. What radio show was it that had a chicken on it that sang the Washington Post March? And I was about 3 years old, and I used to absolutely flip every time I heard that. It was one of the very, very rare times that I wet my pants in front of my Aunt Clara. It was just so exciting. Let's hear this. I'll show you what he did. Bring it on, Big. You would start out like that, slow. What radio show is that? I did that pretty well, I think. I mean, I haven't played chicken for a long time. Did you like that? Yeah. Well, anybody have any requests here for the singing chicken? The silver-masked Plymouth Rock clucker. Anybody out there? Well, of course. And I used to sit there listening to that. I just flip every time I hear it. And my mother used to go out of her bird, if I may use such a phrase in connection with a singing chicken. I'm terrible. It's a bad night. Bad night, Nick. Bad night. But I noticed that the only one person called in, and that person was from Staten Island, naturally, who recognized that it was Joe Graziola who speaks in that strange foreign language. I guess that's the language that all ex-catchers use anyway. You know, they always say, the tools of the trade, you have to do the best. I'd kind of like to go to the University of Denver, though, and take that course in witchcraft. You know, putting the horns on people. Yeah, sitting there. That's right. Oh, yes, fangs. Oh, yeah, they use a lot of venom, that kind of stuff. And I understand that they're also, next year, for people who pass successfully the witchcraft course, they're going to have a course in the practice and the lab techniques of werewolfism. And which ought to be kind of nice. It would be exciting, actually. I've always been afraid that one day I was going to get caught by a werewolf. I once dated a girl. It had very strange-looking teeth, the two little things sticking down the front. And I remember one night we were sitting in the front seat of this Pontiac. Actually, it was my old man's Pontiac, seeing we were parked out in the weeds there. And there was a lamppost, a few hundred yards away, but it was casting a soft, yellowish glow. And I had just seen the werewolf picture. I was always hung on werewolves. I think most of us have a deep secret fear that somebody's going to sneak in at night. And, you're laying there in your sack there, you're skunked out, and, absolutely dead to the world. When somebody's going to sneak in and sink his fangs deep in your jugular vein. Do you have a jugular vein, Nick? I don't know. I've often read of it. I haven't really found it yet. But he or she is going to sink their fangs in your jugular vein, and the next morning you're going to wake up. You know, you won't know this, see? Except you'll think some... You had a fantastic bite from some kind of a bug there now, you know? Yeah, well, you know, those things happen. Yeah, let's admit it, things are always breaking out on you. You don't pay much attention after a while when you've been around. I've known guys that for over 5-6 years had barnacles. And, hey, a human being can get barnacles. That's right. I'm not kidding. A barnacle will attach itself to anything that stays in the water long enough. And it just kind of looks like a big wart. You get a barnacle there working on you. And, of course, people tend to accept these things. 6 of 1, 6 of 1, 6 of 1 I always say that. 6 of 1, 6 of 1 I say, I figure that covers it. You know, look before you leap. I also say that, too. And incidentally, I think you can speak your entire life out with nothing but cliches. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, gang. That's what I say. I say you can always tell a man by the dog he owns, right? Absolutely. Man who loves kids can't be all something, I think. Yeah, clear. Speaking of course, this is WOR New York, and, you know, you just can't get around it. And by the way, I've got a letter right here, which is going into our vast file of crud, which we will keep for future reference here. It says, Shepherd, and it's got 15 exclamation points after it. Shepherd. And I'm always suspicious, though, however, of people who use Snoopy stationery. Yeah, it's got Snoopy on it, see? Snoopy stationery. Yeah, well, that's what I say. Thumbs down. Absolutely. Boo, boo. Wah, boo. Anyway, it says, Shepherd, I cannot believe this. This is a commercial, so you better start logging it. Shepherd, I cannot believe this bird of yours. It's fantastic. This is a kid writing. He says, I think I'm going to have to send for another one, man. Send one quick. I let the first one go during a school auditorium assembly. The students and teachers were amazed and dumbfounded when this thing came flapping its little wings and flew right out over the assembly. He said, I never saw it again. He said, incidentally, it flew the full length of the auditorium. And this was from a kid in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Mark Jakubowski of Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Even out in the Cape, they got civilization. So I'd like to point out, if you'd like to let a bird go in your auditorium session, that's a kind of an expensive gesture. The bird costs $3.98, but, you know, for $3.98, you'll have a thrill of a lifetime. You know, it isn't often for just $3.98. You can see people screaming and old ladies fainting. And, you know, Miss Grubbage from the English department with the blue hair trying to run through a window. That bird flies to the auditorium session. You get kicked out of school for 2 weeks. You know, you get a lot for $3.98. And his name is Tim. It's a little flying bird. And one of our listener types penned a beautiful little ode that refers to these plastic birds. You've seen them, Nick, of course. And here's what his little ode is, and it's kind of beautiful. Listen carefully now for you poetry fans. This has great meaning. Ornithopters on the astroturf, alas. Now, come on, that's a good piece of work. Think of it now. What's it referring to? Come on, Nick. Let's see whether you know your literature. What? Hit the talk back. What's it referring to? Ornithopters on the astroturf, alas. You mean to tell me I'm amazed at the amount of ignorance and sheer dildockery one has to put up with in this life. That is a takeoff on a famous poetic statement. You never heard it. Well, you're going to have to stop reading them Travis McGee books and get out here in real life. Ornithopters on the astroturf, alas. And if you'd like to order one of your little flying birds, they're really great, really. $3.98 is the cost, and they come packed in a little box with a special extra rubber band, so if you bust the first one, you can get the second one, and aim you a little special tool that works at, you know, so you can put it in. And it really flies, man, 16 inches across. And it's a copy of the kind of based on the Leonardo da Vinci drawings. Beautiful little thing. And it's $3.98, and it was made in France, and it goes like Billy be damned. So send your check or money order. Don't send it to me. Send it to Flying Bird with a U. Flying Bird, Department S. Department S. And I know you can spell S. P.O. Box 1909, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10017. All right, I did the station break. I did it too early. Are you out of your mind? This is WOR New York. You're telling me I made... Listen, if I had a dollar for every damn station break I've made, friend, I could buy the island of Eleuthera. That's right. But nevertheless, all kidding aside, gang, I would like to ask this question. Now, that's a nice little literary piece there. Ornithopters on the AstroTurf, alas. What piece of poetry does that refer to? It's a nice little parody on it. And it even has, I think, a little more poetic meaning than the original one. Ornithopters on the AstroTurf, alas. All right, we will award a brass fig to geek to the first listener who rises above the muck of Reader Digestism, who rises above the muck and mire. I'm smarter than the average ranger. Hey, who said that? I'm smarter than the average ranger. I am smarter than the average ranger. Who? Donald Duck? What's going on here? I'm surrounded by non-Americans. All right, all together, gang. Now it's singing time now. Once again, they're passing the jello out. Let's go. Here they come, marching around with their trays. Yes, sir, it's singing time. Hey, it's happy time in the old cafeteria. Thank you, thank you. Now, hold it there. Cut out that quacking. We've had at least 500 calls from people who would love to hear my singing chicken again. Would you want to hear that singing chicken again? Hello? There, finally, you poor clods. Yes, that is a takeoff on Pigeons on the Grass, alas. And who wrote it? That is great. Gertrude Schmidt. Very good. Pigeons on the Grass, alas. I don't know. I just feel like that tonight. I just feel this way tonight. By the way, speaking of with salutes, we haven't saluted anybody recently. We'd like to salute a colleague in the radio industry in Louisville, Kentucky. Did you hear the Louisville disc jockey who passed out on the air last Thursday after downing 3/4 of a 1/5 of whiskey during a 2.5-hour show? Oh boy. Yes, sir. Gary Burbank did it. The 29-year-old disc jockey at station WAKY said he wanted to demonstrate the effects of alky as a warning to citizens to limit their drinking. Just before leaving the air, Burbank muttered, and it's his last words, he muttered, "I'm smashed." And then he hollered, "Hey, take over, I'm going to pass out." And it was a thump. And on came, a selection of Norman Luboff choir records. He was given breathalyzer tests throughout the broadcast, and the last reading he passed out showed a blood alcohol content of 0.14%. Kentucky law holds any person bagged on a reading of 0.10%. And the station got a lot of calls, by the way, on the show. He's lucky he didn't go the way a lot of people go when they start getting into the bag. You know, start getting, "Hey, I ever tell you the one of my..." A great story here. Well, that happens. Although, this idea of people drinking, I have, people always, you know, there's an illusion about people in showbiz about them drinking all the time. Not many do, not any more than the average crowd. And I've never known anybody, hardly ever in radio, who ever drank while he was working. But I will tell you one thing that I saw happen. Fantastic scene one time. And maybe it's the climate, it's the air out there that does it. But I don't often tell stories about, you know, the business, do I? But I will tell you one right now, that one night, a friend of mine, and this was in another town, which for, we have, let's think of a non-existent town, huh? I mean, you know, I hate to tar a town with the evil brush of an iniquity, you know. Let's think of a town, a silly name. Think of a silly name, huh? Hackensack. Well, that's a silly name, but I'm afraid that there is a Hackensack. I mean, it's hard to believe, but there is, actually. Well, there really is. And there's also an East Hackensack, which makes it even worse, compounds the felony. However, I'll think of a town. Let's see. Cincinnati. That's a funny name. Yeah, it's a screwy name. All right, there was a town named Cincinnati, see? And non-existent. It's like, you know, Winnie the Poohsville or something. So it's like Oz. Oz. By the way, speaking of Oz, I'd like to ask another question. You mind if I ask a philosophical question here? There was a character in Oz. Everybody knows about Dorothy in Oz, right? All right, who was the heavy in Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz? No, it wasn't the wizard. Who was the heavy? The Wicked Witch of the what? West. I see. You say she's now doing newscasts over on Channel 2? I see. The Wicked Witch of the West. That is correct. Now, you have proceeded to the second square. Now, we give you 15 seconds to answer this question. What character needed an oil can to get back into operation? Correctimo, the Tin Woodman. Now, the Tin Woodman pursued a quest. All good literature, incidentally, ultimately is based on a quest. I must point that out to you. I mean, you've thought of this stuff, and you sit around in a barber chair thinking about quests, right? But I don't mind playing a good game of quests once in a while, but it kind of gets me in the wrist after a while. No, that's Quint. Quint. Isn't there a game named Quint? Quince. Yeah, you play Quince. Q-U-I-N-C-E, Quince. Yeah, you play Quince. That's right. There's these little round things made out of rope. That's right. Yeah, you play Quince. Right. Well, so I didn't want to confuse you there. But what was the Tin Woodman after in his quest? Correct. Correct. A new suit of clothes. No, that's not right. You get that if you hit the signboard out there over the scoreboard. sharp as a tack. But what you do have to know is what quests are about. Now, he was after a heart, correct. Now, on that quest, he was accompanied by Dorothy, and who was the other character? Correct, the Scarecrow. Now, what was the Scarecrow after in the quest? That's right, a haircut. No, I'm sorry, he was after, I'm sorry, that was a nasty one. He was after brains, which is a quest many of us have been after for years. Okay, wisdom he wanted, actually. Now, what was Dorothy after? That was a silly one. That's right. Can you imagine anybody wanting to go back to Kansas? But nevertheless, Dorothy wanted to get back to Kansas. Now, she was accompanied on her trip by her pet named Toto. That is correct. You're very smart. Now, Toto was, one, a pigeon, two, a guinea pig, three, an alligator with a bad teeth, four, a horse, and other, which? Four, an alligator? Other, yes. What color was this other? Gray. Well, all right, I suppose your addition was gray. Now, what was this other? That's correct. It was a dog. Now, what type of dog was Toto? A terrier. Well, that's as good a guess as any. Now, you see what I'm doing here? I'm leading you right up the primrose path. Now, I ask you another question now. Now, as they approached the city, what was the name of the city they were going to? The Emerald City. It was called the Emerald City because of... it was red. All right, now we're beginning to have discipline problems in the class. And we know how to handle that. We've run into this problem before. And we will give you one more chance to answer correctly, at which point then we will begin to institute disciplinary proceedings. Now, they proceeded to the Emerald City because the Emerald City was... that is correct, green. Well, that's the only way to handle a wise guy in a class is to pretend that he has answered the question correctly. Defang him, in other words. Yeah, he's sitting there. All right. Now, they have arrived at the Emerald City. Now, why did the residents... What did all the residents of Emerald City wear? They wore one thing, one article that set them apart. An article, not necessarily of apparel, but what did they wear? Now we're getting to the nitty
That's correct. By George, you're right. What is it? Sunglasses. Correct. They wore sunglasses. Now, the next question is getting a little more difficult and much more philosophical. Why did they wear sunglasses? All right. You're close. They wore sunglasses because the city was so beautiful and so splendid that that their ruler had decided that they should not hurt their eyes, ruin their eyes by the fantastic glare of this beautiful city, which was made out of emerald. So they had to wear green sunglasses to cut out the glare of the emerald, correct? And all the people thought they were living in Fun City all the while, because they were wearing the sunglasses. Now, the name of the ruler who passed out all the sunglasses and who told them that it was Fun City was who? Anybody who says John Lindsay is out of his bird. Has it occurred to you, friends, that we're living in Emerald City? Oh, better than ever, upward and onward we go. Yes, sir, in fun, F-U-N, in fun town. Gloria, yeah, Gloria Steinem. Oh, Georgie Plumpton, yeah. Gay Khaleesi, yeah. All of my friends marching by. There goes Philip Rawhart. It's fun town, yeah. Normie, little Normie Mailer, he's carrying the banner high. All together, gang. Thank you. So I salute to the Emerald City. Now, do you see how nicely that parallel works now? I don't know why I bother sometimes, surrounded as I am by sheer, unadulterated ignorance. Sheer ignorance. Hey, you know, I was going to tell you the story of what happened in Cincinnati, didn't I? Kind of let that go. Well, of course, there's reasons for not approaching it. I was hoping that the kids would go to bed before I tell you the sickening tale of abysmal woe. Kind of a nice phrase. I can turn a phrase as well as the next. And abysmal woe. That's not a bad name for a rock group. The abysmal woe. But nevertheless, it isn't bad, actually. How about Skippy Jar and the Leftovers? That's not bad. However, in Cincinnati one time, all you kids sit down now and we'll tell you a story. You gather around here. And I'll tell you a story, because that DJ there getting skunked on the air was, he meant to do it. You know, he was going to show people what evil comes out of drink. And, of course, halfway through, he's yelling and singing and hollering and having a hell of a time. And of course, what happened is everybody ran out and got a drink. And we're listening to this. They heard that. It always works that way. Anytime anybody tries to illustrate the evils of sin, what happens within 5 minutes, everyone wants to go out and try it. You know what? You hear about this all the time. You figure you got to know what the devil is. You got to know what it's about. It's like that minister they discovered up in Canada. You know, hear about him? They busted into his room and he had 12 billion reels of porny films and stuff. And he was surrounded by a fantastic collection of unbelievable stuff. When they got him, he said, "Got to know what the enemy is. Got to fight it." He was wrestling with the devil when they caught him. But that's right. Oh, I don't want to even go into that. Bull whips. He had the whole bit going. But I would like to ask, though, if any of you out there who are esoterica students, you've seen all these films, these adult-type films that you see up and down on 42nd Street. You know, it's just, you know, three great new unexpurgated features, first to play in New York. You know, you've seen them up there, three of them. All these little guys skulking in, you know, with a bad skin. You see them. They leave the used magazine bookshops and hurry across the street to the 8 o'clock showing. You know, back and forth they go. Now, I would like to ask this question. Anybody out there goes to porny films? Is there anybody out there who does? Let's put it this way. Is there anybody out there who will care to admit that he does? That was badly phrased. But if there's anybody out there who does, do they have credits? Now, that's just a philosophical question. You know, does it say, "Man in Derby with Black Socks," played by Gaunt Rockwell, another starring role?
just a question. I just wonder, do they have credits? You don't know. Ah, now we are not only surrounded by complete ignorance, we're surrounded also by innocence. That's kind of nice. It's a nice combination. You say your name is Fred Candide, did you say? Yes, indeed. Yes, oh, all right, now we're going to ask all kinds of literary questions here tonight. I just feel in that mood, you know. Just flicking out here with the lash. Shepard's fantastic whiplash. He just whips out with a lash there to wit, you know. Bam. A question here. We're getting a yes. We're getting an answer from a porny film expert. He's calling in here. Who are some of the... He says, yes, they do have them. Obviously, it's a male. Is it a male we were talking to? Of course. I would just like to know who some of the characters are. Excuse me, I'd like to hear some. Hello, sir. You say you go to these educational films, right? They're very educational, quite. Well, now, could you please tell me, do they have credits on them? The better ones do. And how do they describe the characters? The man with black mustache and spats, played by Gaunt Rockwell, or, you know, great names. But they do have credits. And the Pointy Fams have their own favorites now? And you have your favorites. I see. Okay, we don't want to go into detail. Thank you very much. Oh, man, I'll tell you. I'll tell you, how far is it going to go? But nevertheless, speaking of iniquity, and as long as this is the show on iniquity, we've all seen it in our time, haven't we, friends? I mean, we've all been around evil, unabated, of one kind or another. No, I guess that's not true. I think that many people are able to live their lives pretty much all through their life and only read about stuff. Did you agree with that, Nick? And, of course, you and I both live in the village, so we see it in action. I'll tell you, I mean, life is rich and ripe. It's like a gigantic fruitcake, and you're just a little raisin bobbing up and down there. And I picked that cake with malice aforethought. But it's like a human compost heap, and you're part of that great fermenting thing. And personally, I find that any time I go anyplace else for any length of time, I really miss the village. I really do, you know. It feels like any other place is Squaresville. I don't know why. You know, every place, everybody has that clean look. And they worry about lawnmowers and stuff like that. I have not seen a guy on Bleecker Street once mention his power mower. Not once. I've seen him mention other things, but never a power mower. However... Hey, many of you have not been privileged to see evil in its rawest form, sometimes it's very funny. It's not necessarily evil. It's the devil, of course. You know, the devil is always working on us. And since most people are, you know, getting pretty rotten these days, we begin to have a cult of devil worship, which is popping up. Oh, absolutely. Everybody's somehow, the devil is gnawing at you time after time. What do you think? What do you think is causing you to listen to this show? Yeah, behind you is a shadowy figure with a tail that keeps flicking. And, he keeps looking right you in the eyeball there and says, watch, listen, man. Well, anyway, I'll tell you a story about radio. You want to hear a story? That I was in this town, which we, for want of argument... By the way, speaking of the Emerald City, if I may, every time I think of this invented town, Cincinnati, I think of the Emerald City, I would like to ask you another question. What character in one of the Oz books, who was Ozma? Ozma of Oz. Who was Ozma of Oz? Now we're getting esoteric, aren't we? In fact, Ozma was a very important character. Ozma of Oz. Now... What character was bedeviled by jackdaws? Jackdaws are birds. Now you're getting there. Yeah. What character had a head whose eyes and his mouth and his nose were carved in his head? What character was that? Now, that's an Oz character. You don't remember that. Well, you know there were more than one book. Well, I mean, it doesn't do you any good just to read one James Bond book. You got to get the whole mystique, you know? But nevertheless, I'm in this town of Cincinnati, which, as we say, is as fictitious as Oz. Not the real thing. And I was working in this radio station, going to school, saying I was a very innocent type. You know, I was a kid of doing these shows and stuff. And I didn't know about real life. And down the street in another radio station, which was high up. Now, listen to this now, you radio types. You're going to hear a real story because it was a hair raiser. There was a radio station that was in a suite of rooms in a tower in Cincinnati. It was like, would be like almost like the Empire State Building here in town. And this suite of rooms was way up near the top. It was like, 40 or 50, 60 stories up, way to devil up in the air there, see. And there were windows around this building, and they could look out. The guys working in the radio station could look out the window, and they could see the whole city spread out below them. Well, at the level where this station was like a penthouse, actually. At the level where this station was, there was a ramp that ran around the building. You could go out, you know, like on your piazza, and look out over the whole city. Well, it was a little, and it was a little radio station. It was not really a big one. They're way up in the air, see. So I'm working at another radio station, which was exactly the opposite, by the way. This radio station that I was working at had its radio studios in the basement of a building. And it was down underneath, and it was in an old bank building where we had our studios. And down in the underground part of the building, that would be the basement of the building, was where we had our studios. The upstairs were all the offices. We had our studios down there. And part of this building, of course, had been a bank. There was an old abandoned bank vault with a tremendous door. You know, the great big door with a big round door with a big knob on it and all that stuff. And it was buried way in the back of the building, like a very secret place. And at that time, I was working so hard. I was on at 5 in the morning. I was on at 1 in the afternoon. Remember this, 5 in the morning, 5 till 8 a.m. 5 a.m. to 8, got it? I had a show from noon until 1. I had a show from 4 till 5. And then I had a show from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. Well, as you can see, the union rules were very lax in this town. So as it became quite obvious that there was no way for Shepard to sleep. He was on the air every 3 hours, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I put a cot back in the vault. And so I would sleep. I slept and lived in the radio station back in the vault. And the engineer would come back before I was to do my show. He'd wake me up, you know, like 5 minutes before I was to go on the air. And he'd shake me. I'd wake up in a bank vault. He said, quick, you're on the air. Your theme's on. And I'd jump up and run. So this is the way you learn to be a pro. Well, nevertheless, down the street, working in this other radio station, which was high in the air, way up in the air, maybe 60 stories up, in the tallest building in Cincinnati, tremendous skyscraper. And it's about, you know, it's their version of the Empire State Building. One night, this friend of mine, who was much older and much wiser in the ways of the world, and people who work in show business ultimately get that baleful eye of Richard Burton, you know, they have read too many empty, hollow lines. They have listened to the tumultuous cry of the mob too often. And they have seen too many things from too many angles. And so I used to see this guy. And he was a very straightforward guy, the son of a Baptist minister who had been in radio and was now a disc jockey up at that radio station high in the sky. We'd go down once in a while and have coffee. And then one night, telephones began to ring in our station, people calling up from all parts of the city. And they were people frantic. They said, what's happening? What are these things that are coming down? What are these things? Things are coming down out of the air. Flying saucers or something. And the police were looking. Well, what had happened is that my friend, who was in this radio station all by himself, the transmitter was located out of town, and he was on all by himself late at one night. It's like twilight. That's maybe 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. He had just one bourbon too many. One bourbon too many. He locked the doors of the radio station, big glass doors, got out up on the parapet of the 60-story building with the radio station still going. He had, he had a tape that was just playing on. And he stood up on the parapet and he threw out over the city great big 16-inch commercial transcription tapes. He just sailed them out. He had a big stack of them. And every time he would sail one out, he would hurl another epithet. Here goes Lifebuoy soap. Here goes there's a Ford in your future. Here goes Aunt Jemima pancakes. He was sailing the commercials. It finally rotted his head. Well, they sent up the police. They couldn't get in because the doors were all locked. They had to break down the glass door. And after 1.5 hours of sailing commercial transcriptions out over the deep and dark and wine-red sea of time, he sailed the last one out. And the police helped them down. No, just give me anything you got. What's the matter, Nick? What's going on? All right, we'll just let it go. So anyway, he's sailing his stuff down. In the last minute, I just remember when they took him away, he said, you know, he was a little bagged. He said it was worth it. It was worth it. He said, just something, he said, I had to do it. I just had to do it. Just, I couldn't stop. I had to do it. And I said later on, of course, I don't have to tell you that he didn't work there any longer. It was not done as a publicity stunt. It was done as a last final gesture. And there were overtones, curious, strange overtones of King Kong hanging onto the Empire State Building with little biplanes whirling around his head and hurling whatever sadness he could hurl at the great, vast, teeming, fun city below. Bring it up there, please, Nick. So you see, under the great, vast, swirling, swirling, snarling globe of night, there are many things glowing and gleaming. Look me into my eyes. Look me deep into my eyes, and I will tell you your fortune, baby. I see a tall, strong stranger in your future. Yes, he is bound on lascivious ends. Beware of this stranger bearing the carte blanche card. Beware. That'll be $2, please. $2. The moral of this program is, damn it, it slipped my mind. It's all right. We'll think of it next week. It's okay. Don't worry. There's always a moral. Yeah. WR New York. Lester Smith next in the news.
News and detail on the hour from the W.